You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS. Dun, 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 dun.
You think we're good?
Yeah.
We're good. All right.
I'm so nervous.
I don't even know how to start.
I'm so shy. I've never done this before.
All right. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
And welcome back to the No BS Nutrition Podcast.
Season three, bigger than ever. Everything's in HD now. Netflix approached us. We said no. You know, we've got a good thing going. We don't really need that big of an audience. Like, yeah. Hulu approached us. Who else approached us?
I think they all missed
the dollar store.
The dollar store. I was going to say, I think everyone really missed your long-winded jokes.
Oh, yes. I'm sure they did. So, Hannah, it's a new year of the podcast.
It's a new season. We're back. We took our longest break that we've taken so far between seasons. I mean, we really only had one other break, but I don't know. It was just a really busy summer and a really busy last couple months. And I feel like we needed to step back a little bit and rest. It's been a bit of a crazy year, as we were just talking about before we hit record. I don't know. I felt like I needed it. I felt like I feel refreshed now. What do you think?
Yeah, I also feel like everyone else is just like, they're doing their own thing. Everyone's in the same boat. Like, I don't know. I'm here. I'm there. I'm trying to keep up. Yeah.
Well, we have a very...
So I feel like people could empathize.
Oh, totally. Yeah. People aren't like, hopefully. I mean, I want people to want us back, but I don't think they're like pissed at us for taking a little rest. I was going to say, we have a really exciting episode today. And we actually, the guest that we have on today and the interview that we're airing, we recorded way back in the summer. It was like, what, mid-August?
Yes, mid-August.
And when we recorded that, we knew it was going to be the first episode of season three. We just didn't think that we were going to be gone for that as long as we were.
We were really, I mean, it's kind of amazing. It was, I mean, you know from the title, but it's kind of fun to pretend that you don't. But, you know, it was with a guest that we never thought we were necessarily going to get. It was someone we were really interested in talking to because they're doing incredible work in terms of food justice and incredible work in terms of queer activism. Just such an honor.
It was.
And such like a cool person to talk to.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll get into that, but I think we have something we have to do first.
Hannah, do you have a BS of the week?
I do. You know what? I have a big BS of the week.
Give me that big BS.
Okay. So, surprise, surprise, I have another BS of the week that stemmed from my favorite app, TikTok.
Okay. Yes,
just kidding.
Yes.
But,
queen of TikTok in many ways, more than our listeners will ever know.
Thank you. So there's a lot of health and wellness and nutrition bullshit on TikTok. I can't even begin to explain to you the amount of misinformation I see on a daily basis. And so obviously, you know, my aim on there is to help clear some of that up and call it out when I see it. So
Can I ask you who the misinformation is from? Is it from like clinicians or is it from?
So hear this, hear me out. This, I really don't like having to, call out misinformation from other clinicians or professionals, but we've done it on here before. You know, there's a lot of, doctors who speak on nutrition topics that they really, that aren't backed by sufficient evidence, or, you know, it seems like they're kind of just participating in diet culture to make a buck. And this video that I came across was created by a physician, a plastic surgeon. So,
okay.
I mean, how much nutrition training and education this doctor had, I'm not sure. And actually on, you can probably look him up on TikTok, but on his profile, he claims, or his title is a holistic plastic surgeon. I'm not sure what.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't know what that means, but I just thought I'd point it out.
I want, if I get plastic surgery, I want them to do it one way, the way they were taught in med school. I don't want them to do it in a holistic way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So let me give you, I'll give you the whole story. So this doctor sometimes duets, or like, you know, do you know what a duet is on TikTok? Do I have to?
Oh, they like collaborate, two people collaborate on the same audio track or something?
Sort of.
So I'm so old. Okay.
No. So a duet is like you can take someone else's video and like record yourself like in a frame right beside it, almost like reacting to the video.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right?
That's very popular.
So he did it. He posted a duet with a video from a really like, from like a TikTok famous influencer. Have you heard of, let's test your TikTok knowledge. Have you heard of Charli D'Amelio?
No.
Oh my God.
Who's okay. that?
So Charli D'Amelio is a, she's like a teen girl. I think she's like 16 who got really, really
millionaire. A millionaire.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She got super famous on TikTok in the last like year. And she, I think she's from like Connecticut, but moved to LA and like with her family and like lives in LA now. She's super famous. She's an influencer. Like she's a dancer. And like, so her TikToks are mainly like dancing videos. But, anyways.
That's cool.
So she got really famous on TikTok. Anyways, okay. Her sister, who's like a couple years older than her, also got famous on TikTok just by association, like just by being associated with this, Charli, her sister, I think her name is Dixie, is also famous. And so they post TikToks and they make money doing it and they're just huge influencers. Anyways, I don't have a problem with them at all, but
no, sure.
Dixie.
I kind of want to be them.
Oh, totally. Me too. I would love, they have like, I think Charli D'Amelio has like 80 million TikTok followers or something like that. Something insane.
And she must be doing like brand promotion.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like yeah. That. Yeah. Yep. Brand deals. And also TikTok pays their creators now. There's like a creator fund where like for the amount of views you get, you make a certain amount of money or something like that.
Kind of like YouTube.
Yeah. So anyways, Charli D'Amelio's sister Dixie posted a video, just like a random video. It had no purpose of her
so funny.
Drinking out of a carton. I know, but it's, you know what? It's topical.
Charli D'Amelio's younger sister Dixie.
So she posted a video of herself drinking out of a carton of milk.
Cool.
Just that, like that was the video. It had no point or purpose. This holistic
1 million views.
It actually $6,000. It had more than a million views. Hour. This holistic plastic surgeon did a duet to this video saying, this is what he says. No, Dixie. He goes, milk. Don't drink milk. Milk is so inflammatory. It contains hormones and it will give you acne. That's what he says.
It contains hormones. That's so funny.
Right. So there's a lot to unpack there. He goes, no, Dixie, milk is so bad for you.
It will make you fat. He says it'll make you fat.
No, he didn't say it will make you fat. He said it will give you acne.
Oh, okay.
So he says it's inflammatory, it contains hormones, and it can give you acne.
Okay.
So, all right. So, myself and some other health professionals then duetted his video saying, like,
this is... So you duetted a duet.
Yeah, it's like a duet
train. Does Dixie show up in the duet of the duet?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. Anyways.
It's like Inception, like in the mirrors. I know. Like all the way down.
That's kind of what it is. But yeah. I wanted to address his claims as the BS of the week because it's bullshit. Like, so let's address each claim that he made. So the first one is that dairy is inflammatory. So okay. I feel like this is a pretty common myth, but it's a myth.
Okay, yeah.
It's not true. Right. There's, you know what, yeah. According to, there's actually some research, which we'll link in the description notes, that show that dairy actually might be anti-inflammatory. So sure.
Okay.
That statement wasn't like founded in any sort of solid evidence, solid research. And I mean, there's one instance when dairy might be inflammatory, and that's if you have a dairy allergy.
And also, if someone says something's inflammatory and they say something like, oh, well, you like make antibodies against it. You make antibodies against everything. Like,
honestly,
that's what your body
half
does.
The time, I don't even know if people know what, when they say something's inflammatory, if they even know what that means.
Yeah.
If they even know what processes they're talking about in the body that dairy would cause.
I would have loved to like stop him and be like, hey, so what's going to happen?
Yeah, then? Exactly. I would.
What do you think is going to happen next?
So yes, if you have a dairy allergy, sure. Yeah. You would produce antibodies and have an immune response to
ingestion
of dairy, thus inflammation. Absolutely. But if you're not allergic to dairy, there's no reason why it would be inflammatory for you or inflammatory in your body. So that's the number one myth I wanted to address. Number two, this one's we have a bit to unpack here, but he said it contains hormones. So he didn't specify like what kind of hormones he's talking about.
Sure.
So there's two different scenarios here. The first one is like naturally occurring hormones in milk. Like, yes, milk, sure, like other animal products.
Many other things.
Exactly. Yeah. Would contain certain hormones like progesterone and estrogen because they're coming from a mammal. Right. They're coming from an animal. Like,
yeah.
Just like we have hormones in our bodies, there's absolutely hormones circulating in an animal's body. You know, so like, okay, yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. And even like soy, we've talked about this before, actually contains phytoestrogens. And those actually might be protective from disease, but we won't get into that.
Right.
So and then there's the other side. If he's talking about the cows being given hormones, like fed hormones, sure, like growth hormones, so to, you know, for the growth of the cows or to produce more milk. That's another thing. And from what I've read, one thing I know for sure, in Canada, that's not a thing. That's not allowed. Canadian milk is not allowed to come from cows that have been given hormones. And in the States, I relied on a colleague for this one because there's a fellow dietitian that I follow on Instagram, and she's really, really great. She grew up on a dairy farm, I believe. And her Instagram, if you guys want to follow her, is @thedairydietitian. And she like clears up so much misinformation about milk and dairy products. And I was looking at her page to kind of find the answer on this. And with regards to like growth hormones, like bovine growth hormone that cows in the past have been fed or given to produce more milk in order to, you know, rely on less cattle, therefore produce cheaper milk. That was something that in the past was used. And like I said, in Canada, that's not allowed. And I've recently learned that from the dairy dietitian that bovine growth hormone is rarely, if ever, used in the US anymore as well. And this isn't because This isn't for like any sort of nutrition or safety concerns, but it's just solely because of consumer preference. Like people didn't want that in there.
That's really interesting. I feel like I know you have a third thing, but just from the first two points here, there's something that I feel like I'm aware of. It's that there's this, like, we talk about this all the time, but there's this like science literacy issue. Mm-hmm. So inflammation, and we've, like in previous episodes, or maybe a lot of people know who are listening, inflammation is a process by which the body, you know, is fighting something off. Inflammation is generally thought of as like cold and flu symptoms, right? Like you are sick and you're fighting something off. So if people are saying something's inflammatory, but they're not really saying like in what way, you should be really cautious about.
Yeah, people can't back up and say
whether that,
like,
idea is true.
It's inflammatory because it causes this. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I have seen so many people and, you know, nutrition gurus and I guess holistic plastic surgeons on social media, like just spewing out claims that X, Y, and Z is inflammatory. And it's like, it's so frustrating because inflammation is also so much more complex than just like consuming one food, drinking a glass of milk, and then like exploding, right? Like your body, what you're like,
absolutely,
do you know what I mean? So
totally.
Okay, so we covered,
oh wait, sorry, I have one more thing. And then the second thing is, so hormones, and you know what, to be honest, if you're somebody who didn't take a biology or like biological science degree, maybe you don't know this, why would you know this, but hormones, like hormone is not a bad word. Hormones are signaling molecules.
Thank
that,
you.
You know, naturally occur in our bodies.
Yes.
And they're given the name hormone because they basically are released by one part of the body and then go to another part of the body to produce their action. Hormones are really necessary for, you know, our ability to, like, to feel hunger, to feel satiated, to feel a million other things.
Oh, I know. People.
So just because something has hormones, it's not a bad thing.
I totally agree. And I actually had that in my notes to say. And so you took the words right out of my mouth. Like people just hear the word hormones and the word changes. Sometimes the word is GMO. Sometimes the word is toxin. Sometimes the word is hormones. If people just hear the word and they automatically think bad, unhealthy, whatever, when they don't really have that science literacy to understand.
Or like the word fat, for example.
Yeah, fat.
Like they don't fat in foods.
Understand what exactly it means. And exactly, we'll leave it at that. So you're right. And actually, someone left a comment on the duet that I did on this video, and basically said that like people just fear things without even really knowing what they are, and it's so true. And I said, I was like, yeah, you know what? It's funny that people fear toxins so much in food, but then they go and like voluntarily get Botox, which is like literally injecting a toxin into your skin. So it's like,
sure. Or they like drink excessively.
Yeah, exactly. They drink excessive alcohol, but they won't drink freaking cow's milk. Like,
right.
It's crazy. So,
yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to, if you don't consume dairy for ethical reasons or like it's not in your personal beliefs, absolutely, that's fine. I'm not saying that's crazy. I'm just saying that people making assumptions based on, you know, people who aren't credible spewing information or reading one paper on the internet and then, you know, thinking all dairy is bad, that's the kind of thing that's a little bit frustrating. So then
exactly
the last one, This is the one that, you know what, it might have a little bit of evidence behind it, but not enough to say that dairy causes acne. There has been, from what I understand, some research connecting dairy consumption and acne, but definitely not enough to state that drinking milk causes acne. Like if you drink milk, you will see like a worsening of your acne or of your skin. So
there's also like a million variables. Like in any of those studies, did they make sure that every participant washed their pillow every week?
Yeah, what else do they
eat? You
know
what I mean?
Like
what's their skin routine? Yeah. Like do they glob on a bunch of like really terrible cosmetics?
Yeah.
Like,
and also like skin, I mean, I'm not an expert in skin, but I know that it's so highly individual as well. So, right. I mean, there are people who, again, it's also very anecdotal, who will say, you know what, I had really bad acne, or I have really bad skin or redness or whatever, and I stopped eating dairy and I saw an improvement. And like, if that's you, great, that's fine. I'm happy that
power to you.
Yeah, that worked for you. But it's not something that we can go around stating dairy causes acne. Like, that's misinformation and it's misleading. And one final thing, because I could go on forever about this, is that it's so privileged to say don't drink milk. Like, it does this. Like, drink milk alternatives, because that's what, in his post, he was like going on saying there are so many plant-based alternatives that you can drink, blah blah blah. And like, that's, they're just true, there's a lot of alternatives on the market, but milk for a lot of people is a really nutritious, affordable product.
Totally.
So, you know, to just, again, it's really like, we shouldn't be judging what other people are doing. Look at your own plate, look at your own glass, and like, it really shouldn't concern you. This, and that's one reason why this video that this guy made really pissed me off, is like, it shouldn't concern you if she's drinking milk or not. Like, and by being a physician and making a video like that, it's just fear mongering. Like, that's what it is.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's what I stated in my reply to the video. And let me tell you, I got a lot of mean messages for.
I'll fight every single one of them. Oh my God. I'm fighting every single one of them.
I have so many people on that video telling me I don't know what I'm talking about, telling me I'm being paid by the dairy industry, telling me that, no. Like, it's insane. I should just read it.
Honey, I wish we were being paid by the dairy industry. I know.
Yeah, I know. So, anyways, it's just scary to me that, and people in the video as well are saying, well, I'm going to believe the doctor over you. Like, of course I'm going to believe the doctor. He's a doctor. And it's just like, oh God, people don't understand.
The plastic surgeon.
Yeah.
That doesn't specialize.
Not that. And you know what? I actually had a handful of physicians comment on my video saying that they agree with me. And that.
Oh, that's great.
And that guy's video was like total BS, and they were like really upset about it. So.
We'd call those people allies.
What'd you say? We call them allies? Yeah.
We would call those people allies.
We would. Yeah. So anyways, that's my BS of the week. You know what, guys? There's a lot of myths and misinformation about milk and about dairy. And you know what? It's not bad. If you don't want to drink milk for whatever reason, or you feel better without it, that is wonderful. Like Tarek said, more power to you. But it's perfectly safe and healthy and nutritious to drink if you choose to do so.
Also, it's like, yeah, totally. Thank you, Hannah. That was amazing. Mic drop. And yeah, totally. And also don't drop that mic. It
was my new
really
mic.
Nice mic. It's just another example of when people make blanket statements like that. Mm-hmm. That's why we have hour long episodes. It's because things are complicated, and
exactly.
Few things in science are straightforward.
Especially nutrition science. Like,
sure, exactly. Something that's so
like
individual.
The science is always so complicated. So. Like, there's never really like blanket statements that can be made.
Right. Exactly. So when you see something like that, that's like the biggest red flag right away, right? Is that
I agree. Yeah.
It's just this blanket statement.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I hope that plastic surgeon finds peace.
I hope so too. You know,
I wish them peace.
You know what? I do as well. That's what we need. That's what we need in the world today.
Totally.
All right. Deep breath. Okay, well, I guess it's time to get into our very special interview.
So we were really, really, really excited to interview Ian Field Stewart. Ian is an actor, an activist, which is reflected in their Twitter handle, Free Actorvist. I like that. Ian is also Ian is the director now, or the coordinator, I think, mm-hmm. is the new title of the Okra Project, this incredible charity which works on food justice for Black trans folks, not just in the U.S., but all over the world. It's just such a wonderful person to speak with.
Yeah.
So fun and so captivating.
So captivating.
Like, really energizing.
Literally the whole interview, like, I was just sitting there like, with like a little like smile on my face, yeah. Like, but my eyes were so wide because I was just, it was captivating. Yeah, like you said.
What it, also, it's really interesting to listen to how the Okra Project, you know, what started out as a pretty small charity,
yeah,
just over a few months has, as you'll hear, catapulted, skyrocketed into like this multi-million-dollar organization.
And honestly, even probably now, even more so, like since we've recorded the episode, it's totally. Been like 2 months. So, you like, yeah. It's amazing.
It's just amazing because I think we you know, we were, Hannah and I were really lucky to have met someone who's really making a difference in the world in terms of nutrition, in terms of food justice, mm-hmm. In terms of food skills. And if, I mean, Ian has been profiled in like every major publication you can think of. And I'm assuming like we met somebody who like, is now very well known and will be like forever really well yeah. known for this really incredible work that they're doing.
Yeah.
Really an honor. That was, it was amazing.
It was amazing. So we are really, really excited for you guys to hear it right now.
You know, for people who don't know, Black trans folks are disproportionately disadvantaged through systemic racism, transphobia, and every society around the world, really. I mean, and but this is not only seen through violence and lack of accessibility to schools, healthcare, and the judicial system and the workplace even, but of course, it can affect daily living and survival. So the Okra Project works to bring Black trans chefs to Black trans folks in order to provide nutritious meals. They hire these chefs at no cost to the Black trans folks in order to the Black trans and gender nonconforming folks. And one session costs the Okra Project $90 for the chef's time and groceries. And they rely on donations to make all this possible. The work also, which I'm really excited to talk to you about, it's been growing a lot. And I know that some of the initiatives span the entire globe through the International Grocery Fund, benefiting Black trans people anywhere. And I want our listeners to know that so our podcast has made a contribution. We've made a contribution that will satisfy one of those interactions between a chef and a trans person, a Black trans person, or a gender nonconforming person. And we really, really, really encourage you all to, after listening to this episode, or, you know, turn the episode off, go donate at theokraproject.com and then come back and listen, please. Please go follow Ian at their Twitter. And yeah, I'm just really excited to talk to you. We have so many questions, and maybe I'll start with one if you don't mind. So I was really excited when I heard the name of the project, the Okra Project, because I grew up eating a lot of okra. My ancestry is Egyptian. There's obviously a lot of food shared across the, you know, African continent. So immediately I had this like kinship to it before I even knew what the Okra Project did. So I was wondering, can you talk maybe a little bit about how important it is to connect with our food from an ancestral standpoint, from a cultural standpoint?
Absolutely. So I think that the reason that we named it the Okra Project was because during the transatlantic slave trade, okra seeds would be woven into African folks' hair. We would do it to each other. And it was a means of bringing sustenance to this new land that we were being stolen to. And so the okra plant for many, you know, for a very long time, the Black community has represented like community, longevity, prosperity, wealth. And sustenance. And so we wanted to bring that same energy, those, you know, take using food as a symbol of resistance, using food as a symbol of revolution, as our symbol to, you know, stand behind. And, you know, I'm also from the Deep South, and one of my best friends who's still in Birmingham, Alabama, where I'm from, is actually Egyptian. So there's a nice little kinship there. And so I think that, you know, I think that in general, our links to food and how we gather, how we speak to each other, how we move together is so crucial. It's so important to, just, you know, food is what brings us together. You know, I don't know a single person who doesn't have a memory that was either ahead, you know, of like a conversation you had at a restaurant that changed your life, a conversation you had with your family member or in the kitchen, a conversation you just had that brought you joy that happened around food. And so I think it's just, it's a perfect way to gather. And yeah, that's why we do it here at the Okra Project.
I love Hannah. I mean, we talk about that all the time, right? How much food is such a part of building community, right?
It is. It really is. And we actually were chatting about this before, but at the end of every podcast episode, we have a little segment that we call What's Been Tasty This Week. And Tarek and I chat about some sort of food or, and not necessarily food every week, but something that's been exciting to us. And that's just one way for Tarek and I to connect every week over even just talking about food and what we've enjoyed and sharing our ideas. So definitely.
It's, you know, Ian, it's a conversation that's maybe not had as often, this kind of ancestral link to food, this also like really important link between even let's take okra, for example. It's linked to race and the slave trade and how deep that goes and how, you know, but there's also this like beautiful link to like sustenance and survival and life at the same time. And I think the beautiful thing about the Okra Project is that not only is it doing great things for people, but it's also teaching them not just about food, but also about history and about culture. And this work has been growing and growing, and the notoriety for it, is that the right word? It's becoming publicized more and more, right? And you were recently featured in the New York Times. I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said I followed all your stuff. I read everything. You know, it's really important advocacy work. So I'm wondering, how has that journey been, you know, has it obviously very time consuming work? Has it been very difficult work getting into the mainstream, breaking through? And then once you're there, does it kind of help to spread the word even further? And have you seen maybe, how have you seen the popularity of the Okra Project growing, and what has that really meant?
What a thoughtful question. So I think that in terms of notoriety and in terms of just like gaining access, it's kind of the language I typically like to use. It's just like, because it's really that we're just gaining access. We're getting access to spaces that we wouldn't normally gain access to. It's been, there are parts of it that, you know, we have to be grateful for. And there are parts of it that are like kind of the reality of like actually making the work happen still, you know, which is that, you know, I think that the parts of it that we can be grateful for is that it's like, I mean, within, we gained notoriety in the month of June when we really, on May 31st, I released the Nina Pop and Tony McDade Mental Health Recovery Fund, which is a branch of our work that is providing free mental health therapy to Black trans people with Black therapists. And that, and within a week of releasing that work, we were raising $100,000 a day and did so for the rest of June. So our, in that way, our work has just been exploding. And the result of that explosion is that, you know, one, we have, you know, frankly, like it feels historical resources, you know, resources that we would not necessarily have seen or like have seen at other organizations that are like Black, trans, run, led, centered, specifically only serving, you know, like there aren't too many organizations like us out there. And so we are able to create, you know, to create a longer table, you know, for all of us to sit at. And that is something to be so grateful for, because I say this a lot, but you know, when a Black trans woman is given the mic, it is her duty and responsibility to take up as much time as she can, you know, because who knows how long this is going to last, you know? And so I feel very, very grateful to have been given the mic, to have been given the platform, and specifically for our work at the Okra Project to have really been given the platform. That's what feels so important, is that like the Okra Project is like, in my mind, I still like to separate myself and the Okra Project. And so I'm like, the Okra Project's blown up. Like, you know, people kind of know me, but it's the Okra Project that's blown up. And then everyone around me is like, girl, come on now. So maybe that's my own delusion, but I like to think that it's like the Okra Project that has blown up, like that has glowed up. And that, you know, as a result of that, like I've had my own little, you know, rise as well. But, you know, for me, it's like, I'm an actress. That is, like, you know, I'm an activist because I have to be, and I'm an activist because I was called to be. But acting is my joy and my love, and that's my heart song. And so I think that on the flip side of that, the things that are difficult about this rise in notoriety is that, you know, we have experienced, we were a collective with $6,000 and a dream, you know? And quite literally overnight, within a week, we became an organization. And we had to, and I'm telling you that we are building from the ground up, and we are doing that in front of everyone. And I think that's what's difficult, is that everyone can see the flaws, honey. When we take a misstep, everyone sees it. When something goes wrong, everyone sees it. Mm-hmm. And it's felt, right? Because I think that, you know, when you, honey, when the dolls see you at the New York Times or at the this or at the that, you know, honey, the people want to talk to you, darling, and everyone wants to, you know, see where you're at, you know. It's like there's this energy that you are somehow, you know, as polished as those organizations. But those organizations have had all of this time to grow, honey.
Of course.
We, like, all of this attention that's on us is fantastic. But we've had, you know, we had to get a fiscal sponsor so that we would have even a place for the money to go, you know, because we had a PayPal.
Right.
Girl, I'll go on a PayPal.
I remember the PayPal. Yeah.
PayPal tried to snatch our money. We had to, like, fight with them, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, we weren't even supposed to use it like that. And luckily, like, all our money is safe. Like, I want to make that clear. Everyone's donation is safe. Like, no one has to worry. No one has to be knocking on the door, like, so what's good? What's good? Show the receipts. You know, we have them. It's all fine. But it's just like, we are currently rounding the corner to having a physical home. And, like, within, you know, the next 2 weeks, you know, knock wood, I hope that we will be in our, like, we'll have the keys to our new physical home, which is such a grateful thing. But the journey over these last 3 months has basically been, okay, so, you know, right now it's just me and one other person. Then we had to bring on someone else. Then, you know, a member of our organization had to be removed from our organization, and swiftly so. And so then we had to bring up, you know, now we have to bring up a whole new group of people. And so, like, we are finally kind of like, literally as of this morning, we have like everyone who is hired, and all of them haven't been onboarded yet to the process. Right. Which is, it is such a relief to know that soon, like by the end of September, like, we will have our full staff. We will have, like, all the people working who need to work, but it's kind of like, but that's just the beginning. You know, it's like it kind of feels like, I think that with all of this growth and all this notoriety, it feels like everything is the beginning. You know, you take that first step to just get, like, you know, our finances are secure. We're setting, like, goals and intentions. We're working with our fiscal sponsor to get the kind of people around us who are going to help us build our own organization. You know, how are we reacting to that change? And so I think that what I always, like, kind of say is, like, listen, all this is great, but for me, what is always important to remind all of the people that we work with at the Oprah Project is, like, look, the you know, the press, the New York Times, all of that, honey, that ain't the work. The work is the people. And so the people have to remain at the center of everything that we do. People have to be taken care of. If our programming is not running and up, and, like, if people are not getting money, if people are not getting fed, if people are not getting therapy, then, honey, it doesn't matter. I don't care if it's New York Times calling, honey. Because New York Times ain't gonna feed them. It's me that has to feed them. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that's, like, sort of the dichotomy of all of it. It's like, it's amazing to have resources. It's amazing to be in the room, to be someone who can say, I'm gonna start pushing that dial of history just a little bit further. And on the other side, it's also like, girl, all of this glitz and glamour, all of this, all that can be a distraction from what actually matters. And what actually matters is the people. And they have to stay at the center of everything that we do. And so that's kind of my work as the founder, I feel like, is, you know, to make sure that it's my responsibility to make sure that, you know, listen, honey, like, and I think it's also important to name that, like, I always offer, you know, if anyone else wants to do this press, come and do it. But everyone else in the press is like, girl, I ain't trying to have everyone in my business like that. Yeah. Do that. You know, like, that's your job. You know, you go do the boring stuff. We get tons of actually interacting with, like, Black trans people and getting to see how their lives are changed by our work. So I think, like, that is sort of my job, is to be like, look, I am the DNA of this organization. I know everything about it. And I also know that what is always going to be the most important thing is that people feel like when they come to the Oprah Project, they have a home and they have resources.
Absolutely. I think you used a really interesting phrase. So building from the ground up and of course, keeping people at the center. And for me, one of the tenets that the Oprah Project seems to have is, like, this sort of education piece. And I was wondering, you know, Hannah and I like to you know, as much as we like to have fun on the podcast, of course, our main mandate is to, you know, make nutrition healthcare equitable. You know, we want to explain things and we want to provide resources and information to people. And I think one thing that the Ochre Project, you know, fights against at its core is food deserts. And of course, you know, a lot of people might not know what a food desert is, and they probably don't know how prominent they are. For example, many food deserts exist in Canada. I'm sure, Hannah, you can speak to them as well, in Canada's north, especially where many Indigenous communities are, where they're even highly taxed on what most people would consider, you know, typically available foods. And of course, you know, in general, sadly, food deserts are often where racialized people live. So I'm wondering, maybe could you tell us a little bit, Ian, about food deserts and how that incorporates into your work a little bit? Maybe the education piece and the actual, you know, the work of it.
Yeah. Also, apologies if you can hear anything in the background. This is our office and also where my roommates cook. So you know what? You're going to hear the food as it's happening.
We're happy
we
to
love
hear
it.
It.
We yeah, love
so,
it.
So I'm loving it, yeah. So I think that food deserts, I think, it's interesting because actually just this morning I had an interview and someone asked me, you know, oh, have you ever been in a food desert? Which no one has ever asked me before. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting, you know? And it's funny because I don't think that I've ever thought of myself as living in a food desert. But I think I like, I mean, I've also lived, you know, until this year, I've lived the majority of my adult life at or below the poverty line. And so I was like, surely I must have, you know, like, I'm sure that I have lived in a food desert, but it's like, it's interesting because even if this is the work that we do, it's like, it's very, once again, it's very unintentional. You know, this is, we've kind of arrived at food justice work. You know, it, like when I started this, this was not about like me doing food justice work. This is about me being like, let me just take this luxury of like a private chef and make it something that is like accessible to the most marginalized. And these most marginalized people happen to live in food deserts. And I'd learned about food deserts in high school and I was interested in what they were. And I thought it was so fascinating and so heartbreaking that such places like existed. And, but looking back, it's like, well, girl, at times you've been living in food deserts. At times the people that you love live in food deserts. Like, it, but it's like, we just, it's so normalized that we don't think about it. But to answer your question, because I roundabout way,
Oh, no, please take all the roundabouts you need.
But, you know, food deserts are essentially, and I'm sure that, you know, Hannah, you'll be able to kind of speak to this a little bit more as well. But like food deserts, as I understand them and as like we've learned, are areas and neighborhoods, communities that are in areas where they do not have access either to healthy or culturally specific ingredients. And that, for me, that culturally specific ingredient is a really important aspect, right? Because, and I think that we forget about it a lot. And this is where I think the racialized aspect of food deserts is so crucial, because if you've grown up in a home, you know, knowing how to prepare certain foods, like if you've grown up in a Caribbean household, right, there are certain ingredients that are specific to Caribbean cooking. And if you, you know, if you are a Black trans woman or Black trans person, and we know that the rates of homelessness are the highest amongst Black trans youth, right? So if you are a Black trans youth and you're kicked out of your home at 14, you know, any cooking that you've learned up to the age of 14 and you've lived in a Caribbean household, you're looking for those specific ingredients because that's what you know how to cook. And if you live, and if like, you know, and knowing that, you know, homelessness means that you have a harder access to finishing in it, like a high school diploma or even to indefinitely finishing like a higher education, you're discriminated against at work environments because you either like have not completed like a high school diploma or a higher school education, or you yourself are discriminated against because of your gender identity, because you are not at a point in your process where you can quote unquote pass, even though we also understand that like passing is a very much like a subjective social moré that does not really like hold for everyone. And like the rules can really slip depending on like who considers you desirable, which is a crazy thing to think about, you know, but like that we do live in a society where like trans people have to make themselves sexually viable so that we can be employed, so that we can have housing, so that we can survive. But, you know, it's like all of these various realities are put in place so that when you do find a neighborhood, right, you're not necessarily finding a neighborhood that has like, you know, landlords like who are looking, because like also in housing, because housing is scam as well, is that, you know, because honey, you got to have your ID, you got to have your, you know, your birth certificate, you got to have all of these like different like items that people kind of take for granted. But it's like, if you were pushed out of your home at 14, mm-hmm. do you have access to that? how many 14-year-olds do you know who are going to say, oh, better go grab my birth certificate and my high, like, you know, and my ID so that I have all these things, especially if it's like in the moment and you're being kicked out of your home, you know, this. So it's like holding all of those realities, you know, when you do find housing, because once again, Black trans people are the closest thing we have to divinity. Black trans people are the most resourceful people in the world. Like, we will find a house, you know, we're going to find a place to be. But is that house in a neighborhood? Like, is it a secure housing location? Is that housing in a neighborhood or a community where you have access to the kind of ingredients that you're looking for? So this person, this young, like, you know, 14-year-old person who's found a home, right, is looking for housing and is like, found it, and well, okay, but they're not in an area where they can find the ingredients that they know how to cook. And so that sets you back already, right? So there are all of these things that stack up on each other because all of these systems are working at the same time. None of it is just like singular, you know?
Absolutely. A conversation that we have often that I think links really well to the presence of food deserts is, you know, talking about food skills. So mm-hmm. Hannah and I all talk about food skills a lot. You know, it's one thing, I think you'd agree, Hannah, it's one thing to talk about nutrition and to, you know, explain the science behind it and explain the medicine behind it. But it's another thing to actually convey to people the literal means with which they can actually sustain themselves, i.e. like how to actually make the meal, how to go out and find the resources for it and so on. You know, I'm wondering how big of a part does passing on those food skills to the Black, trans, and the gender nonconforming folks who are, you know, clients of the Ochre Project? How important is that?
So it's interesting because, you know, as we are in development, as we are growing, right, a lot of these questions are kind of things that we're considering now. So, you know, hitherto, honey, we have stayed out of those rooms because it was not about, like, you know, like, again, like, it wasn't about, like, you know, oh, we're going to, like, you know, solve food justice or anything like that.
Right.
Like,
it's become like all of the parts have, like, created something bigger than the whole at this point. You
exactly,
know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And so it's like, you know, like, for us, it was about, like, you know, oh, we going to get you some cooking, honey. And that, and like, and it's a simple act. It's right. That simple act of kindness. It's that simple act of, like, just like choosing somebody and saying, you yourself are worthy of being, like, fed. And seeing the ripple effects from that. Right. But as we are moving forward and as we are, like, starting to think about, like, you know, what can we imagine? Right? What can we dream? My coworker, Jaylen, who's our programs and coordinations coordinator, programs and communications coordinator, says it really well, that, like, it's my job to set the table and it's her job to bring people to get fed, you know? And so for me, like, in terms of setting the table, what do we get to think about? Right. And so one of the things that, as far as, like, that we're thinking about is, like, specifically once we're able to, you know, have our chefs up and running the way we want them to be, what does that look like? And what we've really been, you know, working on in earnest right now is bringing back our Ochre Academy, which was a grant from the Map for Youth grant. It was a grant that we got from the Map for Youth. And it was, a small grant that we had that basically set us up to have, like, you know, a crash course in how to be a chef. And it was like a weekend long. And now that we have, you know, some of the access, some of the resources, what we are intending to do is that the Ochre Academy will actually be a part of the onboarding process for anyone who wants to be a chef. Because at the end of the day, like, to be a chef at the Ochre Project, you ain't got to wear no fancy white hat. You don't got to wig, you know, you ain't got to do nothing. You ain't got to go no school. You ain't got to go no, you know, like the cordon bleu. You ain't got to do none of that.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
It's great if you have, like, come through, you know, but that's not necessary. You just need to be able to throw down in the kitchen. Like, because at the end of the day, we just want people to have a good meal, you know? Mm-hmm. And so part of, I think, what the Ochre Academy is, what we imagine it beginning to do, is that it's an introduction to Ochre Project. It's a way to bring people on into the fold of our work. And get them kind of all the basic skills that they need so that, you know, when we're sending people out to homes, like, we know, like, you know, hey, like, we know that you know how to do X, Y, Z, and Z, right? It's a way to formalize that process. It's also a way for us to provide introductions for Black trans people to some of the top Black chefs in the industry. What our intention is through a certain partnership that we have that we're not announcing quite yet, But we're going to basically bring in, you know, all of the top Black chefs in the restaurant industry. And basically on Monday, you would meet with one person and they're kind of giving a certain training here. Tuesday, another. Wednesday, another. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that way, you know, if you are interested in being a chef in the long run, you're walking out of the Okra Academy with seven connections to like some of the top Black chefs in this industry. And I mean, that's a nice little resume bus, you know.
Wow, like, absolutely.
Up your resume. And so I think that's like that, those are some of the aspects of what we're able to think about now. That's when like those, that access becomes the work, right? Is that it's like, what access can we have to people who we wouldn't normally know how to talk to? And that's where the work comes in. And so I think that like, moving forward, our Okra Academy is going to be like, that's going to be the big doll, honey. That's going to be the one that that's the thing that we want everyone to get into. But that takes time. That takes time. It takes effort. It takes labor. It takes thought. It takes, you know, making sure that everything is systemized in a certain way. But you know, once we get into our physical home, that's our next goal, is being like, okay, so how do we safely get all of these chefs into the room and get them trained up? And then how do we think about the next step of getting, you know, folks into people's homes, right? And then also considering, you know, okay, so when if and when there is a second, you know, wave of COVID, does it become
about delivery? Say positive.
I mean, and with that, we also have to be realistic, right?
Of course.
We got to be realistic about it.
No, you're right.
If and when it happens, like what we don't have happen is that we have to shut down our services again, because that is like, that's the heartbreaking thing. That's the thing where it's like, we are so ready to serve and we don't have the capabilities to serve right now. But now, honey, we do. So absolutely. That's kind of like, that's everything that we're preparing for. It's like, okay, so, you know, when can we realistically set an intention for people to be back in folks' homes? When can we set an intention for people to be, you know, for our chefs to actually be, you know, making deliveries and things like that. What all start to look at that'll help to speed along that process? But so Okra Academy and our direct chef services, all of that is in the works. All of that are the things that we're working on. In the meantime, we have our COVID-19 relief fund, which is supplying finances for medical expenses, for groceries, for rent, for all of these various realities that people are facing in this time.
Mental health.
All of it. And then the other aspect is our Nina Pop and Tony McDade Mental Health Recovery Fund, which is setting up therapy for folks. And so all of these things are the things that we're building out and growing and considering what other programming we can make available. And also then when we're not able to do it, because, you know, this is, you know, this can be sort of a one-stop shop, but it's not, you know, there are other things that can be covered. We're looking at our sibling and sister organizations, such as, you know, Black Trans Travel Fund with Devin Michael Lowe, for the Girls Fund with Asani York, for Black Trans Femmes in the Arts with Jordan Jay and Marsha P. Johnson Institute. All of these organizations have been glowing up, and Glitz, of course, with the phenomenal Cheyenne Pepper, who was just featured in GQ today and is making like incredible history, buying like $1 million real estate for Black trans people to be housed in. Honey, we're you know, we out here. So, you know, we all kind of like, August was a good time for us. Us who have been in this organizing fields, and you know, I can't speak outside of New York, but I know that in New York, honey, the girls were getting some coins. And so what I love about us is that when we get these coins, you ain't seen not one of us who aren't putting that money to work. And it's just further proof that it's like, when you give marginalized people, when you give grassroots organizers, when you give people who have had nothing a little bit of something, honey, we stretch that little bit of something into everything.
Resourcefulness, sustainability. I mean, it really does sound like every step you're taking, really in the back of your mind, you're thinking, is this going to be something that's going to, you know, last a long time? And is it going to provide exactly what people need? And how can, like you're saying, how can we stretch it to provide all of that? And also, I think it's so amazing. So as the organization grows, of course, it's been across the US in many capacities. It's been global in many capacities. And you're talking about partnering with sister organizations. Do you have any advice or a call out or a call to action for folks, maybe, you know, even like around the globe, like how can people start getting into this kind of work? Even for existing organizations, people with existing infrastructure, in what ways can they easily be benefiting, you know, Black trans folks, gender nonconforming folks who are being marginalized?
Absolutely. So this is a question I get a lot. And I think that for Black trans people who are interested in getting into this work, I mean, first of all, reach out to the Okra Project, because we want to know what you want to do and let's make it happen. I think that, you know, for Black trans folks, it's just a matter of looking into community and saying, what is the need and how can I fill it? How can I be a part of that? How can I make that change? I think that for folks who are not Black and trans, at least as far as the OCA project goes, that want to support our work, you know, I think that people get frustrated when we say like, oh, like, well, really donations, that's the best way to do it. But at the end of the day, that's just true. That, you know, at the end of the day, like, we've spent so much time with other people taking bits and pieces of our culture and community. And the reality is now that we have some coin, now we can sustain ourselves, like, which is what we have always done the whole time. We don't need to, like, you know, shepherd our skills out to everyone else. Now, this is not to say that there aren't people that we've partnered with. You know, we have a very, very exciting partnership coming up that is has to do with, like, hair and beauty, you know, that I'm very, very excited about, you know. But the way that I feel like, let me say this, because it's actually different than what I normally say to this question, because it's a thoughtful question. So thank you for that. But what I think people can do is start coming to the OCRA Project, start coming to For the Girls, start coming to Black Trans Travel Fund. And rather than saying, what can you do for me? Say, what can I do? Like, you know, here's what I have. I've paid attention to what you're doing. And here's where I see some cross collaboration.
Yes.
Offer ideas. Because mm-hmm. so often people want to come to us and they bring this energy of like, you know, oh, well, you know, what can we do? What can we do? It's like, well, I don't know your organization. I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, it's like you came to me. So come to me ready, like having understood what our work is about, having an understanding of like, here's where I see our work collaborating. Here's where, like, because what that tells me is that you've put in the work to understand what you need to do. And also, listen, I come from very much a philosophy of reparations. So what you can also do is make sure that everything you're giving me is for free. Like,
yeah, absolutely. How,
and also thinking about, like, how are you making sure that here's the gap between, like, Black trans people and opportunities, resources. How are you building that gap? How are you building a bridge for that gap? How are you crossing that bridge? And I think that's the work that I feel like folks are most interested in, because I think that often folks will come to us and it's very clear the difference between people who are like, this is work that we are already committed to. This is work that we are already doing. And we are going to do this whether or not you sign on to it or not, because we understand that it's important. Mm-hmm. And we understand that this work is important, but we have no real interest in doing creating the infrastructure to actually understand what this work requires.
I think it's an incredible point, just to tease apart a little bit of what you were saying there, that there are kind of what I've been thinking too, is like there are existing organizations that are not doing this work that have infrastructure built in that could easily, you know, stand in solidarity with the work that the OCRA Project is doing and what other similar organizations are doing. And I kind of... you know, grassroots movements are important and they're necessary, and the community needs to be able to speak its mind. But at the same time, I want those people and those organizations who have power to understand that they should disrupt the way that their power is structured and start looking at how they can partner with organizations that are growing.
Well, and I think that it also, there's a necessity to recognizing that sometimes the thing that you need to do, you need to lose your job. Quite frankly. Like, the thing that you need to do is that you need to move aside.
Right.
Like, that you need to get out of the way.
Yeah.
That you need to recognize that you have been given privileges and access for so long that for you, it's just every day. Whereas for someone else, like, they can actually do something with that. It's like, what is your actual political goals here? What is your aspiration to do with this work? What do you want to change? Because at the end of the day, those are the people who show up ready to do the work and already having done it. You see what I'm saying? Because I think that, like, you know, for me, it's kind of like so many people who want to call themselves allies or all of this, they want to show up to the house and they want to sit down at the table and they want to eat all the food when they haven't been invited.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't bring anything with them. Like, it's like that cousin that comes to your house and they just like come in, they start walking in your house wearing their shoes and you're like, excuse me, what are you doing?
The wolf in sheep's clothing.
Exactly. And they're eating all the food, honey, but they're not going to do anything to help clean up. They're just going to lay on the couch afterwards and then watch some TV. No. If you come into this house, first of all, take off your shoes because you ain't gonna wear your outside clothes in my house, you know.
Yeah.
And you ain't, and what you are also not gonna do, you're not gonna roll up in my house and start eating all of my food without giving anything back, without bringing anything. It's like, what is that exchange? But people who come to us and say, so listen, I've been thinking about this and I'm really excited about it because I have a vision and I know how I want to do it, but I think that if I do it with y'all, it's going to make the work so much better.
Yeah.
That's someone I can work with because that person has done the work to understand I have a vision for how I'm going to participate in the liberation of Black trans people. And I am going to actively do this work, whether you need me, like with that, whether without you or not. Like if you tell me no in this meeting, I'm gonna say, word, I understand, you know, y'all probably really busy, but I, you know, like, please keep me in mind because I'm gonna keep on working on this. And when you're ready, like, let me know.
Yeah.
Those are people that I can work with. Those are people who are going to be doing the work regardless whether the Ochre Project signs off it or not. Those are people who it's like, listen, they don't need your little Instagram post. They don't need anyone to know what you're doing with them because they know what the work that they're doing is. People who are led by the work, people who put the work first, not who put the social media post first, but who put the work first. Those are the people I can mess with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I you know, if I can do anything, it's I'd love to continue calling on those people with power and those organizations with power to start having that mindset. I mean, we know a dietitian or a dietetic student doing her master's right now, Gurneet Dhami, who was recently on our podcast and who does this work quite a lot. Hannah, you know, she tags the Dietitians Association of Canada on Twitter all the time and confronts them about.
Oh, she does. It's
the things that they need to change, right? I mean, those are actions that mean a lot because we need to convince, you know, the people with opportunities, like Ian, you were saying at the beginning, to stand in solidarity. And like you're saying, the people who are going to do the work are going to do the work. And those are the most important people, regardless of those people with power. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're getting near the end here, which is, I'm going to cry, but I don't know if you'd like to plug anything before we go, please go ahead. This would be a great time.
I think that at the moment, just please, you know, follow, support the Ochre Project, donate through our fiscal sponsor, our Arts Business Collaborative. I've mentioned a couple other amazing organizations. I do want to give an incredible shout out to our entire team who are coming on. Amari Fall, who is our new admin assistant, Jalen Ternage, who is our programs and communications coordinator, Jay Tavares, who's our graphic designer and social media coordinator, and then Ebinger is like also been recently hired as of today as our financial manager. So
amazing.
Please show love to the whole of the Ochre Project and all Black trans people everywhere.
Activist, future Oscar winner, Ian Field Stewart. We're so pleased to be able to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This is awesome.
Thank you so much.
I'll
take care.
Yes, you too.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, I mean, what a lovely conversation with Ian. And now we're going to get into what's been tasty this week. So, Tarek, why don't you do me the honor and go for it?
I will tell you. This is a in future tasty.
Okay, cool.
Does that make sense? It's something that I haven't eaten yet.
Is this the dessert you're going to bake for the next weekend?
Yeah, I really keep building it up, right? It's a really bad idea. So, this coming weekend, we have a family member who is celebrating their graduation.
Two family members.
Exactly. Well, and their lover, who is also celebrating graduation. And of course, everyone's within our bubble. The only people I see are family, and that's it. I wear my mask all day at school. I'm hot wearing my mask all day at school, and then I see nobody until I see family on the weekend.
Oh my God, Tarek, I don't even leave my house like literally every single day. So
yeah, I hear you. Yeah, that's right. This is actually really selfish of me and probably paints me in a bad light. But for, you know what? Like, I think 2 months ago, all of a sudden I woke up. Did I tell you this? I woke up and I thought to myself, I'm craving something. And I just couldn't fulfill the craving. I had a falafel wrap. it was good, but I didn't fulfill mm-hmm. the craving. I got myself, you know, a few desserts, a few here and there the weeks after, still didn't fulfill it. And then 2 weeks ago, I realized what I wanted. It's something.
You're really.
It's something I've never had before. I know. It's something I've never had before. So that doesn't make any sense.
How do you know you were craving it?
Yeah, I can't answer that for anybody. But I really want pistachio cake.
Oh, I'm into that.
Mic drop. Everyone's losing their minds. People listening are foaming at the mouth. They're so excited.
They totally are.
So I looked up how to make pistachio cake, and then I bought $1 billion of pistachios, which is about three pistachios. And they're in my cupboard, and they're waiting for me to make pistachio cake this weekend to bring. No one asked me to make pistachio cake. No one wants pistachio cake. There's already going to be a cake, but I'm bringing I'm bringing another cake. So that is my tasty. I'm making pistachio cake, and I'm going to make chocolate ganache, maybe chocolate cream cheese frosting. I haven't decided. And it's going to be an orange pistachio cake. Wow. Pistachio cake with orange syrup.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I can't mess it up because I only have those three pistachios.
You only have three pistachios.
It's too expensive to buy more.
I agree. You know what? Actually,
I don't want Big Dairy to sponsor us. I want Big Nut to sponsor us.
Big pistachio. Okay? Big... Big cashew. So I recently created a recipe for homemade Nutella.
Oh, lovely.
And I did a lot of research before making the recipe. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to put in it. This is how I'm going to make it. Because
I feel like we're getting to the hazelnut conundrum.
Because hazelnuts, you know what? If pistachios are $1 billion for three, hazelnuts are $1 billion for one. Because those little...
They're really expensive.
...effers are...
Those little boogers, yeah.
Those little nuts are...
Little nut, yeah.
...are so expensive. And I made my first batch, and let me tell you, it did not turn out. It was bad. Okay. It was like...
Did you roast them first?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I roasted them first.
Yeah.
But what I tried to do is add...
When do we get our TV show? Sorry, keep going.
I tried to... Anyways, I don't want to go into it because this isn't even my tasty, but it didn't work.
I want to hear about it.
And it didn't work. And so I had to go out and buy two whole cups more of hazelnuts.
Oh, but are you broke? Do you need money?
Seriously, like... my PayPal is, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, I know. I feel you. I feel you on that. All right. Go ahead. Ask me what my tasty of the week is.
Okay. Hannah, what's your tasty this week?
So my tasty is not a future tasty. It's actually a very recent tasty. I just had this for dinner tonight and I just have to rave about it because it's every time I eat it, it's like, wow, this is my favorite meal. It's probably not my favorite meal, but it's very delicious. I made for dinner tonight totally vegan. I'm not vegan, but totally vegan chili cheese nachos.
Yum. Okay. Yeah.
So great. Shout out to my girl Angela from Oshi Glows.
Whoop whoop.
Do you know Oshi Glows? You know those
cookbooks. Of course. Mom has the book in the kitchen.
Yeah. So yeah, she just came out with a third cookbook, I think, but I have her first and second cookbooks, and it's in her second one, the Oshi Glows Everyday Cookbook. There's a recipe for chili cheese nachos, and it's like super nutritious. Like the chili's full of like beans and lentils and vegetables, and then the cheese is it's a cashew cheese, big cashew. But it only calls for a quarter cup of cashews, which isn't bad.
If we had merch, that would be one of our t-shirts.
Big cashew. Oh my God. You guys, let us know if you want t-shirts or bags or something.
I want a big cashew merch or a big cashew t-shirt. Yeah. That sounds good. I know. Yeah, let us know.
Oh, you guys better want them. We're going to make them anyways.
Yeah.
So anyways, the chili and then... It's like this cashew cheese, but it's not really cashew cheese because there's only a quarter of a cup. But then you do boiled potatoes and carrots. You drain them. You put it all in a blender with nutritional yeast and salt and sriracha. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it actually, does it really taste like cheese?
It's tangy.
Yeah, it's tangy. It's tangy. It's almost, it's kind of like a queso, but oh my God, it's so good. And then you pile it all on top of tortilla or corn tortilla chips. Yum. Oh my God, we had it for dinner. And I topped mine with cilantro and pickled jalapenos.
Ugh. You just lost like a third of our listeners when you said cilantro.
I'm so sorry. I love cilantro.
I love it too. They can leave. Just kidding.
Yeah. So that's my tasty. If you guys have that cookbook and you have not yet made the chili cheese nachos recipe, you have to go do it because chef's kiss. Delicious.
That sounds amazing. A-M-A-Z-I-N-G. I am losing my mind that this is the first episode that we've recorded in months. And
I honestly don't. I feel like I don't know how to act.
I know. I don't know how to act.
I feel like this is going to be a shit show.
It's such a privilege. A privilege to work with you and to listen to your tasty. That's a wonderful tasty. And
okay, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. We are back. So make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review. We love to read your reviews.
Yes, love them.
And follow us on our socials. We are No BS Nutrition Pod on Instagram and NBSN Pod on Twitter, right?
Yes. And I'll also say the only reason we haven't talked about the world is because we're recording on the day where we don't know what's, you know, everything's happened. All the votes are coming in the U.S. today. Yeah. So we have no idea what's happening. We're not trying to be tone deaf or anything. We'll talk about it in the next episode. Yeah,
the next episode. Whenever these episodes come out, hopefully in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
All right.
Miss you, Roxanne.
Bye. Bye, Roxanne.
Love you guys. Bye.